My kids often ask me, if you could have any power, what would it be? I imagine the superheroes we see in movies. You know, someone in tights, cape, and underwear outside of their pants. I tell my kids I would want the power to heal any living thing. I say this looking at the dying plants in my pot, but often thinking of my son's bumps and bruises, or my patients who struggle with pain or discomfort due to weaker muscles. We say things like run fast or be super elastic or have the power to time travel. Superheroes are often thought of being physically strong and therefore the type to run into a burning building and come out without a scratch. But really, where is the courage in that when you know the threat you are facing pales in comparison to your super abilities? Real courage is facing a challenge knowing you are vulnerable and uncertain what the outcome may be. As ordinary human beings, what happens if we stumble and fall? Can those who fall be superheroes too? What chances are we taking? What if showing up and truly being present is the greatest human superhero? Dr. Brené Brown, she studies the stories of those who embrace imperfection, those who lean into struggle rather than run from it, and those that go into challenges knowing they may fall but can rise again. And they don't put their worth of self on the line. Failure does not mean you are a failure. As far as I'm concerned, it sounds like she was talking to some aspiring UUs, right? She identifies vulnerability as the source and birthplace of all virtues: hope, empathy, accountability, authenticity, creativity, joy, belonging, and love. She says vulnerability sounds like truth and feels like courage. It is not weakness. It is a measurement of courage. If I were to take stock of all the events or choices that ultimately brought me the greatest joys in my life, it would be the ones where I entered a position or path that I initially feared and I was vulnerable. Moments of struggle, moments in which I fell. Marriage, job changes, motherhood. My mother left India to America at age 36 to establish a new home for her family. She was a nurse in India, and that profession paved a way to bring over my father and siblings. She cleaned homes initially and then was able to obtain a nursing job in New York. I wasn't born yet. My father, three siblings, three sisters, and one brother remained in India while my mother worked here in America alone for a few years prior to my family reuniting. Everyone that surrounded my mother was a stranger, and she often found herself in unsafe situations. Through my mother's stories, it was made clear to me that life in America was a struggle for her. Growing up, she cautioned me often, "Don't trust anyone. This is not your country." She passed down an armor, and I wore it. When I became a mother, motherhood illuminated some pretty wonderful skills that I know I have, but it also revealed some scary things inside of me, too. 13 years ago, when I was pregnant with my first child, I was overpowered by the hormonal changes, and my predisposition to mental illness was not something I was fully aware of or prepared for. I did not understand how postpartum can take the form of rage and irrational fears, along with uncontrollable crying, despite the presence of a beautiful child and a loving husband. I couldn't sleep even if I had the opportunity, and I remained alone most of the time. And initially, when medication for depression was offered, I refused. For months, I struggled, trying to be tough and deny the actual impact of postpartum depression, the impact it had on myself and my family. Culturally, I was taught mental illness was a source of shame. But the armor that was passed down to me, it wasn't working. As the manifesto reads, when we run from struggle, we are never free. I observed my mother living like an outsider, growing tougher, at the same time. She was tough with her neighbors, coworkers, my father, her own children. She did not support my marriage due to differences in our race and culture. She did not have a relationship with my children. With her tough exterior, to trust, to connect, and ultimately belong was difficult. I knew I needed to find help. I didn't want my children to grow up with a distant, sad mother. And I learned with medication and therapy, one can be led to a wonderful side of motherhood in which a child can thrive. With the support from my husband and wonderful kids, I was able to accept my vulnerability, own my story, and choose not to repeat strong familial patterns. My mother was sick these past 3 years, requiring extensive care. I traveled back and forth from California to New York several times while parenting and working, hoping to tie loose ends, connect, and protect her. She resided in a nursing home. She was able to tell nurses correct dosage and procedures as she watched them perform the procedures that she performed over 30 years. However, sometimes she was unable to distinguish me from a nurse's aide. Ultimately, her tough exterior softened, and she accepted help from all of us. My father lived 10 minutes away from her and was with her daily, and I could tell from speaking to him he enjoyed being able to sit with her without any agitation or fights. When my mother passed away this last year, I believe I got to see her essential self her last few months. It was so sad, but beautiful. Seeing my father take care of her and her final acceptance of love and help, I continue to grieve what I had, didn't have, and what I hoped for. Oncology chaplain Michael Eslin speaks of how so much of our culture creates fear and cautions us to avoid any potential danger. Through the stories of his patients with cancer, he teaches us that the magic of life gets revealed when you move towards vulnerability. He states, just as many of us are, so many patients are proud of their self-reliance and independence, and they struggle to accept help. But as they share the weight, they find love in places that they would not have expected. He speaks of an interdependent community in which embracing vulnerability is a way to connect to another. Creating environments within our homes, schools, and church that allow this space is vital. By being empathetic and compassionately sitting with someone who is suffering, we could create an environment that nurtures vulnerability. Nurse and professor Teresa Wiseman views the attributes of empathy to include perspective-taking, staying out of judgment, recognizing and communicating emotion, and staying mindful. Empathy is a vulnerable choice that fuels connection. Engaging with empathy is not an easy task. Having the desire to do so and to allow others to do the same is an act of courage in and of itself. I would encourage anyone to attempt it, but not everyone could be in the same place spiritually. Empathy creates a space for others, however, it does not mean we know what it's like to be that person. Tom Owentool, minister, writes, "No matter how theologically sophisticated we might grow, none of us can climb inside another person's heart. We have no idea how devastating or perhaps how relieving the loss of a certain pet or relative might be. In fact, we have no business then evaluating the seriousness of another hurt. Our job is to be present, listen, and care. Because deep down, we don't want other people rating our losses or judging the seriousness of our suffering. We need from others what they need from us, ears and arms. Every hug and kiss from my children recharges me and can make most obstacles feel small. They have a superpower that pierces through any armor I may try to wear. They've made me stronger. They keep me in the moment and they force me to slow down. It's not uncommon for my preschooler to make a 10-minute walk into a 30-minute walk. Looking at trees and changing leaves. He is of a new generation, learning about mindfulness in school, and he often tells us, belly breathe, if he sees that we're getting upset. Being a mother was a transformation that I needed to continue to grow and to try things that I feared. When I was scared to initially grow my practice, my son Chris encouraged me by saying, "Peter has to see this. You do a good thing. You help kids walk." He was 6 at the time, and I was pregnant with Peter. That was 5 years ago, and I went ahead and I expanded. And then, most recently, just a few months ago, it was time again to reevaluate. Do I expand again, or do I keep continuing to work my long hours, further jeopardizing some health issues I acquired, or do I close? I chose the latter. And Chris was right there next to me the day I was selling the specialized equipment I initially spent so many hours studying and customizing and training on. He was packing boxes, and he took a large clock off the wall of my treatment room, and he so eloquently told me, "Mom, now that you're closing, you are giving us all the gift of time." It was so sweet, compassionate, and wise. I have some pretty great kids, and I step into the next stage of my life with a lot of uncertainty, hoping to give the gift of time. There just seems like there's never enough, though. I've worked hard to be happy and try to find balance between work and family, but sometimes that scale tips. I try to look back on my actions with self-compassion, but I know I wasn't always in the moment and vulnerable and have needed help from others to do so. With so much collective anxiety from daily political chaos and trauma and economic stress, how can one have the space to have this conversation with ourselves? In some situations, it's important to realize the privilege that enables one to pause long enough to have such an internal conversation. My husband, Miguel, and I are high school sweethearts, and we went to high school in downtown Manhattan. Few months prior to 9/11 and getting married, the World Trade Center was surrounded by live music. Miguel and I frequently spent time in this area, and we were excited to see the unexpected live music at the foot of the buildings. We walked past them day by day. Miguel immediately asked me to dance, but I said no. I refused. I remember him saying, "When are we ever going to have this chance? The chance to dance to live music at the foot of these beautiful towers. The weather was beautiful. The music was upbeat and fun." But I said, I'll take a rain check. The thought of dancing in front of a bunch of strangers in the middle of the financial district was extremely uncomfortable for me. I get frustrated at myself when I think of this full body vulnerability and inability to be intimate at such a special time. Poor Miguel, he so badly wanted to dance. Of course, I had no idea how unique that opportunity was. And after such trauma and suffering, ultimately we went on side by side, us city folks, camped around the country, lived in Alaska in the dead of winter, jumped in every body of water we could find, and inevitably we found struggle again upon us, with each fall and rise becoming stronger. We sought church, actually, during a time when our union was struggling and in the aftermath of the emotional turmoil of depression, rejection from family, and the roller coaster ride of being new parents. We were alone in California, and we found our community at UUCLB. Initially, I have to admit, it was difficult for me to sing out loud and get used to all the invites to dance. UUs are pretty upbeat, different from the conservative home I grew up in. We have gained courage to show up to the ordinary joys of our lives. We are grateful we found such a compassionate, empathetic group. May we all be present for what comes to us, the sorrows and blessings, and allow us to embrace our vulnerabilities and the power of ordinary courage. As in the manifesto of the brave and brokenhearted, may we turn toward truth and look it in the eye. May we be the authors of our lives. May we write our own daring endings. May we craft love from heartbreak, compassion from shame, grace from disappointment, courage from failure. Showing up is our power. Amen, and may it be so. Thank you.